Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani.
Hey-o.
Hey, we've got a bye week show, Chris. Wisconsin coming up this weekend. But first, top of the list, top of the priority list, as you are wearing your Eagles jersey, Saquon Barkley made it back to New York, well, New Jersey.
Right.
And really made his presence felt. I got to believe that had to feel really good for Saquon Barkley and all Eagle fans.
Yeah, there was no doubt he took the opening carry of the game, and you could see all 11 blue jerseys just swarm to that guy and maybe a little extracurricular activity after the whistle. You could tell everyone on both sides of the ball was aware of the emotion involved. I was glad to see Saquon come out on the winning side with a great game, really. A superlative performance from the former Nittany Lion. And when you see the number of sacks that New York Giants offensive line gave up and how helpless they were against what has been a relatively anemic pass rush for Philadelphia so far this season, it's hard to believe, right, that he wouldn't want to spend the rest of his professional career running behind that offensive line.
Exactly. He has to be so happy, obviously, having a big game against this former team. Obviously. And by the way, if you didn't see the game, that was vintage Saquon Barkley, was it not, with several of those huge runs? And then after one of the big runs, he follows it up with like a 5-7-yard run and punishes the defender on the run. It was just that, to me, that's the Saquon Barkley we remembered from Penn State, is it not?
Yeah, indeed. He's a special talent. We were really fortunate to watch him in blue and white while he was here. And all the Eagles fans in Pennsylvania are also equally blessed to watch him in midnight / Kelly Green.
Oh, gosh, yes. That was great. Looking forward to seeing more from Saquon the rest of the year. All right, let's flip over back to college football, Chris. And I just want to get a sense of how you spent this past weekend with college football. And before you react, it strikes me that there's a lot of fans in all of sports who are just, they are a fan of their team, not of the sport itself. And there used to be the old joke at the, in Philadelphia, that there were exactly 17,777 Philadelphia Flyers fans. Okay. That was what it took to fill the arena for hockey. But you play another hockey game, they don't care if other teams are playing. My point being, I love college football, whether Penn State's playing or not. And I thought this past weekend was just an example of how good the sport of college football is.
Yeah, man, it was awesome. I love college football. It's my favorite sport. I think it's the best sport. I think it brings the most variety. It's easily the most idiosyncratic of the major American sports. And to me, that's a feature, not a bug. And when you talk about the weekend, truly, I mean, Thursday night, Friday night, into Saturday, they were games that were worth watching that will have implications for the new 12-team postseason. It was a lot of fun. And it was nice to just be able to enjoy Penn State sitting at 6-0 and having the week off. And, you know, now we can start biting our fingernails down to the nub about James Franklin coming off the bye week and going on the road to Madison. But for what it was a lot of entertaining football this weekend. I really enjoyed getting a chance to watch a lot of it.
It really was. And for those who the idiosyncrasies of pre-recording this show, I know in State College, next up will be another hour where I'm on with Steve, which we actually recorded prior to this show.
Right. And spoiler alert, it's pre-recorded, folks.
Yes. And I told this story there. So you're going to hear this a second time. But for those of you who won't be around, I was during the weekend, there was a family get together. My nephew, his daughter turned 1 year old. She's the first of that generation. Okay.
Awesome.
And he's a good Penn Stater. He scheduled the party during a bye week.
Good
okay.
Man.
He had like 40 or 50 people there. And at one point, I would occasionally just sort of walk off a little bit, get on my phone to check scores. The one time I wandered off, I bump into my nephew who's hosting this thing. What's he doing? He's on his phone checking scores, Chris.
Awesome.
Oh, the pride I had, the pride in that. But let's get into some of these games, because not only do they have an effect on the national picture, but also on Penn State. Let's start in the Big Ten, Chris. As Penn State fans, you've got to be rooting for Illinois now. Right now, that's your best win. You want to see Illinois do well. And just because it's Michigan, you want to see them do poorly.
Correct.
Was that a typical Illinois-Michigan Big Ten type game?
Yeah, it was appropriate for the Red Grange throwback uniforms, right? How you feel about those, Jim? You're pro or con on the Red Grange unis?
I loved it. I know a lot of people hate it. I did too. I liked it. I thought they did a good job emulating it, but still having to have the modern helmet and all.
Sure.
I thought they did a great job. And I got to send out kudos to Michigan, who brought their 1920s offense to the table, which I thought was very appropriate for this game. Michigan scores 7 points, single digits. Illinois beats them, Chris. How wonderful is that? I look at that as a double win, with Illinois winning and Michigan losing.
Yeah, I think they could have been playing with an actual inflated pig's bladder, and Jack Tuttle couldn't have looked any worse than he did in that game. But kudos to Illinois, who could have, you know, they could have tipped the card over after what happened to them against Purdue 2 weeks ago. That game had absolutely no business being in overtime. I mean, they were one stop, 2-point conversion away from complete disaster, because that Purdue team is just terrible. And so for them to right the ship over the course of the week and get their heads right to beat a Michigan team that, as you discussed, has a terrible offense at home, but still one of the better defenses in the conference, and could have baited them into a slugfest that could have put you in a position where it's a one-score game the fourth quarter, and then one crazy play in one direction or the other, especially maybe some help from the officials, which it kind of looked like they were getting, put you in a bad position. The fact that they avoided that, I think, speaks to the fact that, especially after some of the other results this weekend, we can definitively say Illinois is Penn State's best win so far this season.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Michigan is out. That was elimination game for them, if you even felt that they had a chance to do anything.
That was the old, you're now mathematically eliminated, but based right on what we knew of the team going into last week, they were out way before that.
Yes. And, you know, Illinois, technically just one loss, they're still in this conversation. The other game that was in the Big Ten that factored into all of this was Indiana playing Nebraska. And I think going into this, Chris, by some people, I mean me, looked at this, and I looked at Indiana's schedule. Indiana beat nobody. Nobody. I think you and I had this discussion.
Yeah.
You know, their big win out of conference was Charlotte, right? But they then have to play a Nebraska team that has a pulse. It's a respectable Nebraska team, and I'm thinking this is going to be another slugfest. Illinois proved themselves against Michigan. Did Indiana, were they going to do the same thing against Nebraska? I think we got to reach the point finally, Chris. You know what? They just might be for real.
It's hard to dispute that they're a top 25 team for sure. They might be a top 15 team. Look, it's tough to say, even though the way they're scoring points and the way they've looked throughout the season, that this is a team that belongs in the top 12, let's say, right? Because even beating up on Nebraska the way they did, it still doesn't, to me, definitively answer the question, which we're going to get a chance to answer down the line: how would they look against Ohio State or teams of that caliber? So, you know, you got Oregon, LSU, Georgia, Texas, the cream of the crop, not to mention Penn State. Could they do this versus one of the truly best teams in college football this season? I'm not so sure. But they're, you know, they're probably playing like a top 15 team right now, for sure.
We look at Penn State's schedule, and we're all conceding a loss to Ohio State.
Correct.
And saying if they win the rest, 11-1, they're going to be in great position. Looking ahead to Indiana's schedule, I'm dismissed a couple games. I think the games to deal with are Washington at home, Michigan at home, and at Ohio State, okay? Let's do the same thing we're doing with Penn State. Indiana will lose to Ohio State, especially mm-hmm. it's at Ohio State. Do we accept that?
Sure.
Okay, so that's one loss. Washington and Michigan, I think of as their other two games that – or could they conceivably lose? How do you think they'll do against those two teams?
Oh, I really think, well, as of the third quarter in the Nebraska game, I thought they would go 2-0. Now there's a little bit of a question mark because of Curtis Rourke being injured, yeah. their starting quarterback. So I think we've got to see how he looks against, it's Washington next week, right?
Yes. Or I believe.
Week. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It is Washington at home. So Washington is doing the travel thing. So, but Washington,
and their backup looked pretty efficient. I mean, that seems to be a system run offense, and he looked pretty efficient in it up against Nebraska. But by that point, Nebraska was so beaten down, and Dom Rayola, who I think probably has just had too much put on his shoulders too soon as a true freshman, as talented as he happens to be, has been up and down all year, and he was having a down day. And when you can't get anything going on offense and you are getting absolutely bull whipped on defense, at one point or another, you just start to throw in the towel. So the question is, did Indiana's offense run by the backup look as efficient as it did because of when he came in, or could he have won that game if he was the starter at the opening whistle? So we'll find out soon, but that's the one caveat on Indiana, but totally reasonable to say they're going to be 11-1.
Yes. So that is a factor, and that's going to be part of this. Now, Chris, we're running out of time in this segment. We're up against the break. I do want to get back to some other games from the weekend and then continue this conversation about how things look going forward, because it's got really interesting both in the Big Ten and in the Southeast Conference, especially after the results from this past weekend. We will get to all of that, and eventually we'll get to Penn State, Wisconsin. We're going to do that, Chris, when we come back after the break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number two of our show. And Chris, when we finished up segment number one, we were talking about how things are shaping up in the Big Ten with Indiana after they embarrassed Nebraska in their game over the weekend. I want to continue that conversation, but I cut myself all away from the games from this weekend. I want to go back and hit a couple more of them.
Sure.
We had the Southeast Conference had two huge games. Georgia took down previously number one Texas. Was this Texas welcome to the SEC ball game? Is this Georgia is really the best team in the Southeast Conference? What does this game mean?
Well, it was definitely the welcome to the SEC game. It had that feel about it, did it not?
Oh, come on. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Now, is Georgia decidedly better than Texas? I'm not sure. that I would say that. I think if you played that game 10 times, maybe each team would win at 5. I think Georgia's very, very good. I think it is going to be haunting Bulldogs fans for a very long time. That one Ryan Williams reception in the Georgia-Alabama game, because but for giving up that unbelievable superlative individual effort, they're undefeated right now, and we're talking about them very differently. But Anna, to the victor go the spoils. I know there are some Penn State fans who feel some kind of way about the Nittany Lions still sitting at number 3 and Georgia hopping up and into the number 2 spot. But that's one of the more impressive wins that's been had this season, especially considering that it was played in Austin with the crowd and the team and the coaching staff fully cognizant of what was on the line. I think a lot of people correctly identified this as the biggest game Texas had played at home in years and years. And for them to just lay a complete egg in the first half like that and allow Georgia to take control of the game, it reflects very poorly on how well Steve Sarkisian had the team prepared to play that game. And it reflects well on Kirby Smart and Georgia, who have been, you know, one of the best and most consistent programs in the sport for several years now, to say, hey, don't forget about us.
And it did change everything, where had Texas won, that would have been loss number 2 for Georgia, which really would have put them on the edge there as far as the playoffs go. So big win for Georgia.
It puts them in the driver's seat for the SEC title game.
Yes, and Georgia jumping Penn State, I'm not sure. I noticed it. I didn't want it to happen. But you know what? I get it.
So who cares? This isn't even the poll they use to determine who goes into the playoffs. This is like nonsense. Don't lose a moment of sleep about it. Who cares?
Right. If Penn State takes care of business, you're in the Big Ten championship game, or you win the Big Ten.
Sure.
If you're a one-loss Penn State team and Oregon or Ohio State wins the Big Ten, you still, at 11-1, put yourself in position for a home playoff game. You're right. This Georgia jumping them, meaningless. But it's what we talk about, so we talk about it.
By the way, Georgia jumped them because as the number 5 team in the country, they beat number 1 in their building.
Yes.
Now, if Penn State, as let's say number 3, requiring them to take care of business against Wisconsin, incumbent on all these discussions is the assumption that you win when you're favored, which Penn State will be in all but one game, you're going to get your shot at number 3 in Beaver Stadium, or excuse me, at number 4 to win a 3-4 matchup. And then you can demand the sort of respect that I guess some people feel we should be asking for now, even though I don't know that we have a win that merits that. And it's 2 weeks away. So just keep winning your football games and you don't have to worry about it. And if you don't win the games, does it matter? Like, do you get to hang a banner that you were number 2 in the nation for 1 week in October? Who cares?
Exactly. It's still about wins and losses. Speaking of which, Alabama loses for the second time, Chris. Was that an elimination game for them?
They're only 2 losses away from being eliminated from the playoffs, Jim.
Well,
No, it wasn't even remotely close to an elimination game for Alabama. Nevertheless, that does not look like a team that's destined to play in the first 12-team playoff.
Well, Alabama could win out, and I'm looking because I have somewhere, you know, their schedule the rest of the way. The Southeast Conference is going to be just a crazy jumble.
Yes.
But Alabama has left games with Missouri and LSU. Now, I still think Missouri's a fraud, and I believe that game is this weekend.
Yeah.
And yes, it is. And I think Missouri's a fraud. I think Alabama win that.
Oh, yeah. Missouri is not good. Look, if Alabama loses to Mizzou, like, fire Kalen DeBoer into the sun. They have no business being in any conversation about the SEC title or the national title or the playoffs. They can go to the Meineke Car Care Bowl if they lose to Mizzou.
How about Alabama then has to play at LSU?
Well, that to me is great, because if you're somebody who believes that this Alabama team doesn't belong in the playoff conversation, then that's a decisive game. If they can beat LSU, that then puts them back into the discussion, a rematch with Georgia in the SEC title game. And we get to settle all of this on the field. And if they lose to LSU, then once again, they don't have any part of any of those conversations and it will have been decided on the field. So I think that's actually a nice slate ahead for the Crimson Tide from the perspective of non-fans who just want a fair shake.
I want to take a look at that Southeast Conference race because it's become fascinating with Alabama with the two losses and maybe if they'll get a third, but Alabama wins out and has two losses. I think that there very well can be two teams. Georgia has one loss, right? Their two games are at Ole Miss and home to Tennessee. Will Georgia win both those games?
Boy, and you know what? I think I actually misspoke because Alabama's both of their losses are in conference. Exactly. So beating LSU still doesn't get them back into the SEC title picture. They would need some help. Maybe gets them back into the playoff conversation is, I think, what I was thinking. Man, you know, I have been high on Tennessee all year, and I actually said on the air last week that I thought Bama at Tennessee was a bigger game in the SEC, both for the national picture and for the conference title hunt. And I think that actually bore out. I think that was the better game to watch, the more competitive game and the more consequential result. Even still, I'm not sure I saw enough from Tennessee that gives me a high degree of confidence that they can go to Georgia and win.
That's the way I felt. And again, like I kind of played out this schedule. Well, and here's the thing. Texas, their two games are Kentucky and at Texas A&M.
Man. Yeah, A&M is another team that is quietly right there in the conference title race.
Yes, they are. So if you're Texas A&M has no conference losses, but Texas at Texas A&M, that could be to make it to the Southeast Conference championship game. Who
Which
do you
I
like?
Love. Texas you want to or talk Texas about how A&M? You love this sport? Like, I would love to see that. The renewal of that rivalry as an in-conference clash and for it to be those sorts of implications, man, as a college football fan, it doesn't get much better.
Yes. And with that, I played it out a bit. All right.
Sure.
I had Texas beating Texas A&M. Okay. Just for argument's sake. And I had LSU's the other team like A&M with an out of conference loss, no losses in conference. And I had them losing at Texas A&M, but winning at home against Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what I have based on this. I have Texas finishing with a loss, Georgia finishing with a loss, Texas A&M and LSU each having one conference loss and one out-of-conference loss. Do the out-of-conference losses come into play at all in the tiebreakers? I have
no idea how the SEC tiebreakers work.
I think it's one of those complicated, you know, eventually I think it's the record of common opponents or, you know, your record against common opponents.
Yeah.
Or then the record of team.
That's how it works in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it gets really complicated. But very realistically, I have four teams in the Southeast Conference finishing up the season with one conference loss and two teams with two losses. And guess what? One of those teams that I have finishing with two losses is Missouri. All they have left, really, at Alabama, which I think they'll lose, and a really bad Oklahoma team.
Yeah.
Chris, it's chaos.
This is maybe like the best and worst case scenario for the first year of the 12-team playoff because the type of chaos you're describing, Jim, I think very well could be replicated in the Big Ten as well.
Yes, and looking at it, we went over Indiana's schedule and said, look, if they could beat Washington and Michigan, which seems doable,
yeah,
the question mark is, you know, with their quarterback out, would they struggle this week against Washington? Loss to Ohio State gives them one loss. Ohio State, they have Nebraska at home this weekend, at Penn State, home with Indiana, and at Michigan. They probably have the toughest schedule But I think we all think they're the best team and will keep winning, right?
This is the look on your face. That's the reaction I can give you, Jim.
I think I've been doing that. It's just like I assumed they would beat Oregon a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did.
Here's the thing. I do believe that. I know nobody wants to hear that, especially on a Penn State show. But even given the result in Eugene 2 weeks ago, I still think Ohio State is the deepest and most talented team in the Big Ten. And I'm not completely convinced they're still not the best team in the country. Sorry. Top to bottom, the old expression, you play these games 10 times, are they winning 6 out of 10 in practically every matchup? I still think so. My gut says yes.
Well, I didn't know where Texas fell in all this. Were they going into this weekend actually the best team? I did the, you know what, we saw them crush Oklahoma, but now some of the luster has come off that already. But I thought Texas was the one team I might be able to say, you know what? Well, I saw them play Georgia, Chris. No, they are not necessarily the best team in the country. So it's still jumbled. When we come back, we're going to take a look at how these numbers work in the Big Ten. We'll do that when we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're trying to make some sense of the college football season. And Chris, I think in general, I use the word chaos, and you brought up the 12-team playoff is creating some of this, but I also think the addition of Oklahoma and Texas to the Southeast Conference, Oregon, USC, Washington to the Big Ten, not only added the curveball of a couple good teams going into the best conferences, but it also created schedules where you have, you know, in Indiana being a threat with only really one game against the very best teams. They got a game against Ohio State, but they skip Penn State. They skip Oregon. And because of this, it's almost like you have multiple conferences within the conference. You have not enough teams of the good teams playing each other. So you're going to have extra teams who are at the top of the conference with zero or one loss.
Right. Which is why you and I have talked on and off since the summer about strength of schedule and resume and brand equity, by the way, as a boost or a liability in Indiana's case. And one thing we haven't even mentioned is that you still do have two undefeated teams in the Big 12. Now,
Who aren't going to play each other in the regular season, correct?
Correct, which I think is a one-bid league. You've got two undefeated teams in the ACC, one of which is Pitt, as we're recording this. They're going to play Syracuse on Thursday night, and that's going to be a big game. The second half of their schedule gets rough. No, I'm sorry, excuse me, three, because SMU as well, and then Miami. And that's to say nothing of who I think might actually be the best team in the conference is Clemson, who's undefeated in conference, and their only loss is opening week to Georgia. So that then begs the question, dependent on how things shake out in that league down the line. Now, more of those teams do play each other. Are they a one-bid league? And then you've got Boise with their only loss, a seven-point loss to undefeated Oregon, the Heisman Trophy frontrunner, And both the service academies undefeated and playing lights out football.
Chaos, Chris.
Chaos. It's beautiful. How can you not love this? It's great.
It is. It's great stuff. Now, you mentioned like within the Big Ten, there's also Illinois, by the way, who has just one loss, the one loss to Penn State.
Yeah.
And they are going to Oregon, if memory serves me right. I'm trying to bring up the schedule here. Illinois plays Oregon at Oregon this week. Now, the brand equity part of it with Illinois, they lose to Oregon, second loss in the conference. They're eliminated.
Sure.
Indiana, fair or not, with two losses will most likely be eliminated. But if you mentioned ACC also real quick, Clemson does play Pitt. So
yeah, Pitt's schedule the rest of the way is very rigorous. Like the ACC, more so than the other conferences, is going to be able to sort some of these things out via head-to-head matchups in the regular season.
Pitt has, as you mentioned, Syracuse, SMU, Clemson, and Louisville, and BC.
And finish with BC, yeah.
Yeah, so I suspect they'll lose two games at least through that. But back to the Big Ten, you've got Illinois at Oregon. I'm saying that eliminates Illinois. Indiana, if they beat Washington and Michigan and lose to Ohio State, they're 11-1. You got to put an 11-1 team in the playoffs, Chris, right?
Do you think Tony Petitti will quit his job if that happens? Do you think if Indiana or Illinois is in danger of mucking up the God-given playoff spots for the royalty of the conference, do you think he'll just resign?
You know, that it's an interesting question of what would he be upset by it, or do you?
I mean,
look
it's
at
more
it
money,
like,
right? It's more money for the conference, but this is going to be a joke that only a narrow segment of the audience will get. I know there's probably not a lot of crossover in the NBA fan base and the KSN fan base, but it's like when Adam Silver took over for David Stern, and then the Toronto Raptors won the NBA championship. Like, there is no way in a million years David Stern ever would have allowed the Toronto Raptors to play for, let alone win, an NBA title. And there's no way that Jim Delaney ever would have allowed for Indiana to even threaten to get into the Big Ten championship game.
We've already seen precedent for that during the COVID year.
Correct.
When Ohio
yes,
State
absolutely.
Got
we
in.
We will change the rules in the middle of the season. You knew what this was when you joined. Like, don't pretend like you didn't. Yeah. So who knows, man? We are in uncharted waters.
I'm going to show my age again. You brought up the NBA. Are you old enough to remember the Knicks winning the lottery the year Patrick Ewing came out?
The frozen envelope draft? Of course. Of course. Well, yeah, that's how – listen – that's how David Stern did it. That
was like taped to the side of the container.
The David Stern NBA was at best half a step removed from professional wrestling. It was like SEC officiating.
Well, anyway, I'm not sure how upset he'll be if it means an extra playoff team, but I'm looking at it in the Big Ten. If you're Oregon, the schedule doesn't look all that daunting. You're undefeated. You've got Illinois at Michigan, at Wisconsin, and then Washington at home. Do you see a loss anywhere for Oregon?
I think they need to be really careful of that trip to Ann Arbor.
Yes.
Again, I understand what a complete mess Michigan's offense is. The question is just kind of like I talked about with Illinois. They're playing on their home field. There is, shall we say, a suspiciously conspicuous track record of questionable officiating calls.
Are you talking about the referees?
Yeah, new members, especially of the Big Ten, happen to be playing in the Big House. So, you know, maybe, just maybe the referee gets distracted as, Bo Schembechler's grandkids run in with steel chairs. Who knows what happens? But if Michigan can drag you into a dogfight where you're up by 10 or fewer points late in the third quarter, that's the kind of game where you start to get a little bit nervous, right? So there's the whole cross country thing, which I think has been massively, massively overblown, but it's not a non-zero factor. I think it's just not what many people have made it out to be. So if I look at that, it's tough to go to Camp Randall Stadium, as you know, I'm sure we'll discuss all week with Penn State. But the road trip to Michigan, to me, is the big question mark for Oregon.
Yes, we know Michigan will want to turn that into a rock fight, as will Illinois this week. It'll be interesting. And again, the at Michigan and also the at Wisconsin, that's a West Coast team doing the traveling. We saw what happened to USC trying to travel. So that's all part of it.
And but I just don't think Illinois has the athletes to go into Outson Stadium and pull an upset.
No. That if the game were at Illinois, you'd give them a puncher's chance.
Sure.
But at Oregon, I think the spread on the game is over 20 points.
Yeah, I was about to say, I actually, despite having a lot of respect for Illinois' defense this year, I won't be surprised at all if that one gets ugly by the end.
And it very well could be. Now, in looking at these schedules, you know, head-to-head, we always look at Penn State. Penn State has at Wisconsin this week, home to Ohio State, home to Washington. And we'll get into that. I don't want to ask you what you see as wins and losses there, because next segment I want to talk to you about the Wisconsin game specifically.
Yeah.
But Wisconsin themselves, they only have one conference loss. So a win here against Penn State, they then are at Iowa, and then, as we mentioned, they have a home game against Oregon. Wisconsin has a chance, if not getting into the conference championship game, maybe playing spoiler here.
Yeah. They have a chance to play spoiler. They have no chance to get into the conference championship game, because to get into the Big Ten championship game would require them to beat Penn State. And we know through a long track record here that if Wisconsin does win this weekend, it's entirely Penn State's fault and through no merit of Wisconsin's. So they will probably lose two out of their next three games if they win.
Of course. So, you know, in looking at this, Chris, I see the very realistic possibility of Indiana finishing with one loss, Ohio State finishing with one loss, Oregon zero or one loss, and Penn State with one loss.
Mm-hmm.
Four teams from the Big Ten with zero or one losses, that sounds to me like four teams making the playoffs.
Well, and again, it begs the question that if you assume the team with the best record wins the Big Ten championship game, which I'm not saying I think I would, but let's just for the moment argue that one of those four teams would then end up with a second loss as a result of having theoretically the second best season in the conference and qualifying for its conference championship game. To what degree would they then be punished for playing and losing the extra game? We don't really know how the committee is going to deal with that, but.
Well, here's the thing. What I think, Chris, and correct me if I'm wrong, if Oregon goes undefeated, it's Penn State, Indiana, and Ohio State with one loss. But if Ohio State, if this goes the way we expect, they beat Penn State, they beat Indiana, since they won the head-to-head, is it not then one loss Ohio State versus undefeated Oregon for the conference championship, and Indiana and Penn State close their season with 11-1 and one loss?
Yeah, sure. But the question I'm then asking is, let's just say Oregon wins the rematch, right, which, by the way, I would not pick them to do. Would Ohio State be punished for its second loss?
I think I will call it half a loss. What I mean by that is they then should, in my opinion, should drop below the one-loss teams because they played the game and they lost it. But I don't think they should be punished as much. I don't think they should be punished a full game's worth. I think when making the playoff decision, I'll take the two-loss team that went to the conference championship over a two-loss whoever else team from the Big Ten or Southeast Conference.
The logic can be to say to Penn State and Indiana, you had a chance to beat Ohio State and you didn't.
But would I make Ohio State comparable to the two lost teams in the Southeast Conference and put them in that basket and say they've got to win the tiebreaker? I think you could probably say Ohio State, the basis of beating Indiana and, you know, beating Penn State, they're beating a couple playoff teams. Chris, I'm running overtime. We'll pick up the conversation after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local
retailer.
Hello, and
welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. Chris, I was going overtime. I was so into this conversation about the tiebreakers. And let me just ask the general question for the topic we were talking about, which is, a team makes it to the conference championship game, which essentially says they were the first or second best team in the conference. You lose that game, you are now the second best team in that conference. Someone in the Southeast Conference has to lose that championship game. Same thing in the Big Ten. How much do you punish the team? Is that like a normal loss for those two teams? Or do you just say, you know what? All that establishes is they're the second best team in the conference.
Well, I think it's silly, frankly, to punish the team that has to play in that game and loses. Like, I don't like the concept of rewarding teams for doing nothing. I understand it's out of your control, right? Tiebreakers and the whole deal. But this is why I think conference championship games are silly. I've thought that for a long time. But especially under the new format, I do just wonder if there isn't. I understand they make a lot of money. There are plenty of other ways to make money in college football. For years and years and years, we heard that we couldn't have a playoff in college football because the bowl system makes too much money. Remember that argument? Remember that totally dishonest nonsense we were fed for yes. decades? For decades. And so, and we all knew it was falderal. We knew one day there's going to be a playoff, and then magically the money will just be there, and we'll know that we were being gaslit for decades in this sport. And sure enough, that materialized. There's another way to make up for the revenue that is currently coming through conference championship games, even if it means expanding the playoff format somehow. So I don't like rewarding teams for doing nothing. You force a team to play in a game where somebody has to lose, and then you say, oh, second loss. Sorry, guys, you're dinged down now. So I think it depends a little bit on the circumstances, but look, let's be honest. What it actually depends on is the brand equity of the program. And if it's Ohio State getting a second loss, it's not going to matter at all.
Exactly.
On the other hand, if it was Indiana, they'd be out of the playoffs.
Right.
That's true facts.
We have precedent for it, but where it's going to become more interesting is in the Big 12 and the ACC, where, you know, my feeling is, you know, the one loss versus two losses is going to be the first tiebreaker. Not absolutely, but I mean, that's going to be a huge factor. What if you have those two undefeated teams in the Big 12 finish up undefeated and play their conference championship game? Are we going to, and it's a competitive battle. It's not a blowout. Do you take two teams? Do you take both teams from the Big 12?
No, absolutely not. It is a one bid conference, in my opinion.
Same thing in the ACC. So if Miami's undefeated going into a conference championship game with Clemson, who lost the game to Georgia, we know that. Clemson beats Miami, which right now, if you made me pick a Clemson-Miami winner, I would pick Clemson. Okay? I think they would be favored in that game. Clemson beats an undefeated Miami who now has one loss. Is Miami eliminated from the playoffs?
That's an interesting question. I think that is the most likely scenario where the ACC gets two bids. Nevertheless, what little data we have, very little actionable information to work from But what we do know is that an undefeated Florida State was left out of the four-team playoff by the committee last year. And to me, that was indicative of the future of that conference. So if I had to put my money on a one-loss Miami team making it in after losing the ACC title game to a one-loss Clemson team, I would say no, they don't do it. And the rationale would be that they had escaped by the skin of their teeth in three straight conference games in the heart of the season, which they have. I mean, there's been a controversial officiating decision affect
every
one-score games for three consecutive weeks for Miami. So they don't get it done against Clemson, especially given what Georgia's doing this season and how long ago it was that Clemson lost. I think the ACC title winner gets in, and that's it.
Do you think during the offseason the ACC officials went to a seminar with the Big Ten officials?
I think it's entirely possible. And I think that, you know, Vince McMahon's been in a little trouble right now. So maybe it wasn't him, but somebody else from his organization. I don't know. Maybe Triple H or somebody came in and conducted that seminar.
It certainly appears that way. All right, Chris. Let's talk about this upcoming Penn State Wisconsin game. And I've been talking about this for a while now. There have been teams, like we mentioned, Clemson got their clock cleaned by Georgia to start the season. And then they played exceptionally well since.
Don't forget, though, that game was like what, like 3-0, 6-0, like late into the second quarter. Like they hung around for a while.
Yeah, they hung around for a while and then just couldn't stick with them. Remember also, USC beat LSU to start the season.
Yes.
And LSU
could end up being a real problem for LSU, given the way USC season has totally fallen apart. Because you talk about, you know, what's going to happen if there's this logjam of teams. That could be a liability for LSU.
Yes, it can be. And, you know, but it also, to me, it tells me we overreact. I mean, it's the only data point we have after that first game. So we have to say Notre Dame is better than Texas A&M. USC is better than LSU. Georgia is worlds better than Clemson, who's not very good.
By the way, in all our discussions, we haven't even mentioned Notre Dame, which, I mean, the way NIU is playing, shout out to the Toledo Rockets, by the way, the way NIU is playing, that loss should be disqualifying. Like, I don't even want to hear it. Get out of here. Like, go play in the San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl or something, but I don't want to hear any playoff talk. With their crappy schedule, And with that loss to NIU, Notre Dame should be done. They should be done. Here's what I want. I want – there's no better candidate, Jim, to be America's team than the team that is playing Notre Dame in any given week. And, oh, it just so happens to be an undefeated service academy. They play them both. They play Army and Navy, cadets, midshipmen. Go get the job done, and then we don't even have to talk about this anymore. But they should be out.
I'm going to be all over – it's Navy this coming week, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. You're right. That's America's team. Really America's team. Correct. Service academy.
It's literally America's team.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be go midshipman. I lost my place. Here's where I was headed with this is Wisconsin. No, that's fine. They're good tangents that we go on. My point with all of this, how you start, you know, let's not overreact. Alabama really trashed Wisconsin at Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But since then, Wisconsin has seemed to gain their equilibrium. They've won their last three games. Again, not the greatest competition, but I guess my question is, you got to go into Madison. You got to go into Madison at night. How good is Wisconsin? And how concerned are you that Penn State's going there after a bye? Because we have a real bad precedent for how this team plays coming out of a bye.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the biggest area of concern. And the one counterpoint to that is that, look, I don't care what USC did at Maryland. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for Lincoln Riley, and it's embarrassing for that program. I think Lendale White was probably right. They should have left him on the tarmac in College Park. Like I honestly, like that is an absurd, inexcusable performance. There's just no two ways about it. It was pretty likely that USC was going to give Penn State its absolute best shot And if that turned out to come up just short, that they were going to pack it in for the season. That appears to be what has happened. It was still something Penn State had never done as a program before, went out there. It was still a big game for a lot of reasons. And it was the gateway to even have any of the conversations we're having right now. And that was the game that James Franklin lost traditionally. And so the fact that this team was wired up differently to win that game, to me, also leads me to believe that they can be wired up differently to do what James hasn't done yet, which is run the table following the bye weeks. So, yeah, it worries me a little bit. But, I mean, Jim, just rattle off the three teams that Wisconsin is 3-0 against in its last three games.
I actually have it here somewhere, Chris.
Well, I got it right here. I'll save you the time. It's Purdue Rutgers, and Northwestern. Yeah.
Now,
so, I mean, look, they're certainly playing better. But if you want to sit here and have an argument with me about whether Penn State should be ranked number three or number two in the nation, if you can't go on the road and win, I don't care what time of day it is. I don't care how raucous the crowd is. I don't care whether or not they got a bar inside the stadium. You can't win against the team that needs to play a murderer's row like Rutgers and Northwestern and Purdue to puff their chest out a little bit. Then, like, who cares? What are we even doing here? So, like, yeah, am I marginally worried about it? But, yeah, sure. But we're a better football team than Wisconsin. Win when you're favored to win, and you'll do what you haven't done yet, which is go to the playoffs.
And that's it was my feeling for this. And I'm kind of leaning over to my computer because I want to check the spread of the game, which I thought was fascinating, Chris. I don't know if you saw this.
It was 8.5, I think.
Well, the number you came up with split the difference. I looked and saw an early spread prior to, the weekend's games. It was actually started at 10.5.
Right.
I looked it up, and several services still had it 10.5, and some had it at 6.5, which is a huge spread, a huge disparity. And I was just looking to try to get an updated one and see if they kind of, ended up at 8.5 somewhere
in
between. Can
you blame any rational human being for looking at this team and betting against James Franklin? Like, I can't. But what I also know from having been close to the program for a while is that James has grown and improved as a head coach while he's been at Penn State, which makes sense because he's in his early 40s when he took the job. You know, it was heading into the 2022 season, he'd never run the table of winning as a favorite in every game where Penn State was favored to win. And then he's done it for 2 years straight and counting. So, there's what you can't do, and then there's what you haven't done yet.
All right. Looking at the spreads, yes, some of the services have it at 10.5. Some of them have it at 6.5, which is crazy. But I'm with you. I think, again, I'll say it like you did. Penn State is the much better team than Wisconsin. I think they'll take care of business when they get there, Chris. All right. We were kind of all over the place with stuff. Good show, though, today. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, Chris. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.